From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Lauren Groff never thought she would become a Floridian, but then she never expected to be name-checked by a president. In 2006, she moved to Gainesville for her husband's business. 9 years later, President Obama called her novel, Fates and Furies, his favorite book of the year. Groff is out with a new book of short stories called Florida, and the state that she creates is not a punchline, and it's not populated with trailer parks and retirees. We spoke with Lauren Groff before her reading at SCAD Show in Atlanta. Lauren, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
So glad you're here. These 11 stories in Florida, they look at the state across time and geography and development booms and the disappearing natural world. What is it that you find most interesting about this state that you now call home?
I am so ambivalent about Florida. So I both absolutely adore it. I go for a run every single morning out in the prairie and I see sort of the natural world and I can, you know, there are always snakes underfoot and amazing birds that I wish that I could identify sort of landing in the trees around me. It's very stunning and beautiful and there's a pour of sunshine over everything. But there is at its heart, a very central strangeness. It's very swampy in its interior, Florida. And the natural world here, too, is both perilous, but also it's a gift. And the thing that I was looking at when I was trying to figure out how to put this story collection together was how do I look at Florida itself? What do I think of the name Florida? What does it mean to me? And it means pervasive, ongoing dread. covered in sunlight, in golden, beautiful, stunning sunlight. So
I'm guessing Florida Tourist Board is not going to make you its spokesperson.
Well, perhaps they will if they want to make Florida even weirder than it is. Yes.
Well, there is this sense of danger underfoot, especially in places where humans meet the natural world. You know, there's like a snake coiled in the bathtub and an alligator not far from the dog pen, a sinkhole at the edge of the suburb. Does it feel like that to you, that you could just slide into some other realm?
It does feel like that to me, but it also feels like that in terms of being a parent in today's world to small children, right? I mean, I feel like just the act of having a child in the world is an act of danger, right? Because suddenly you have this heart taken out of your chest and made manifest in the world, and you can't control the world around your child. So I do think that that's the way I feel about the state, but it's also the way I feel about, you know, being a human in this current environment that we happen to be in right now.
Well, the danger of children is, it seems like part of the theme here. There's a story, Dogs Go Wolf. It's about a pair of young sisters, their mother, all adults, abandon them on this island. And at first, you know, it's fun. There's a big sister making up stories about princesses, but eventually they're eating chapstick to survive. You are a parent, but you're also a big sister. Was that your role with your little sister, kind of keeping her going?
This story did come out of a moment in my life when my sister was having a hard time, and I kept thinking how I could protect her. I mean, she's an adult now. She's in her mid-30s. She's a two-time Olympic athlete. She's fine. She doesn't need me to protect her. But this is also something that I've been thinking about a lot in about the world in general is how do we take care of the most vulnerable among us? I mean, we have to take care of the vulnerable people in our world. How do we do so? How do we make sure everybody is able to survive? How do we do these things? So the sense of peril comes from a larger, almost existential idea in that story.
Well, her answer to vulnerability is fantasy. And I can't help but think of Florida as Disney princess land. Did you have those kind of fantasies? Did you make up those kind of stories when you were a kid?
No, I've never liked princesses. I've always hated the whole narrative of the princess because the narrative of the princess is your life basically ends as soon as you find love, right? I mean, it's almost as though a woman only exists in order to be an object of love or to have a love story. When in reality, I mean, I have an older brother and I saw that he wasn't fed these narratives. He was fed the narrative that you go out and you have your adventure and your life is your adventure. And I resented the idea that my life would end as soon as I found love. So I actually truly dislike a lot of the narratives that we are force-fed and that we actually take in with, you know, our milk, with the media all around us. And I think one of the things that this collection does is that it opposes a lot of these narratives about what it means to be a mother and to seize that space, what it means to be domestic or domesticated, what it means to sort of resist the wild but while also tempting the wild in. You know, I hate the cowboy mythos. I hate princesses. I hate the things that we are told that are skeletons of our narratives. And as we all know, narrative is the most important thing. If you control the narrative, you control everything right now.
You're reminding me of an appearance that I saw of you from 2016. This was on the Charlie Rose Show. Charlie Rose, we know what has happened to him since. But I just want to play it because it's pointing to something that you're talking about.
She had so much rage, right? So much rage. And I see this in myself, and I see this in a lot of my friends,
too. What did
you
have rage about?
One thing
you have rage about.
Well, it's not so much that I am unusual in my rage. It's that women are not necessarily allowed access, open access to our fury. Yeah.
Wait, stop.
Yes.
Women are not necessarily allowed open access to their fury.
Right.
Tell me what that means.
A bit of a pause there, Lauren Groff.
Yeah. Okay. I have so much to say about
this. Was
that a gasp? also, he talked over me that whole thing. But I would like to say I have felt guilty about this interaction the whole time. I was playing nice, and I was being a nice guest. And I could have just said, women have so much to be angry about. I mean, when we make 75 cents on the man's dollar and less for women of color, when we have to fight every day for our bodily autonomy, when we have lack of representatives in politics, in business, on the Supreme Court, I mean, everything. We have everything to be angry about. And yet I failed. I failed all feminists. By not saying these things to Charlie Rose and by not standing up for women at that moment. So I feel very ambivalent hearing that clip.
Well, you just got to make it up, right?
This may not be
Charlie Rose's audience, but besides being in the position of woman-splaining female rage to Charlie Rose, when you heard about the accusations against him, did you have any perspective on the way that he understood or maybe thought about women?
No, because he was kind to me, right? He was being very nice. He did interrupt me, you know, and I think I am more used to that than a man would be. I don't have any perspective on him. I'm sad because I like to watch his shows, but I believe women. You know, you have to believe women these days, and we have to all be allies to each other, men included. In fact, men need to step up and start being better allies.
We're speaking with Lauren Groff. She's out with a new collection of short stories called Florida. Well, there are women characters, in fact, one that seems to pop up, a mother of two, like you, and a writer, not originally from Florida. So her feelings about the South seem pretty ambivalent, as you said, you feel about Florida. What do you think it is that most people, Southerners included, even here in Georgia, don't get about Florida?
I think there's a lot of contempt about the state and the people who live here. And I'm not quite sure I know where it comes from. I think part of it is just the fact that we sort of dangle off the rest of the continental U.S. We are the most south you could possibly be. And there are a lot of overriding narratives that are just insane. I mean, people talk about Florida as though it's God's waiting room because there's so many old people. And they talk about Florida in the context of Florida Man, you know, the person on Twitter who everything, something bad happened. happens, every time something bad happens in the U.S., some guy walks into a store and sticks up the store with, like, his banana, that comes from Florida, right? And so the perception is that Florida is kind of ridiculous. And I don't think it is. I think it's really interesting. I think it's there are parts of it that are hilarious and strange and unusual. But there's a lot of contempt that I guess I had to get over myself as a transplant. And I think that a lot of other people, even other Southerners, hold in their hearts for Florida.
Not projecting that this woman is you because she's a writer and she has two kids. But the last and the longest story, this woman comes back again. And she's traveled to France in this story. And it's there that she disappointedly realizes she may belong in Florida more than anywhere else. What is drawing her back there?
Right. So this character is not me. And I did have an experience. I took my own two little boys to France when they were 6 and 4 by myself, which I would not make my worst enemy do that. It's a terrible thing to do. And we had some fun. But I did realize halfway through that where my children are happy is where I need to be now. And it seemed like it was both clarifying but also deeply dispiriting, because I do value autonomy and independence so much. But when you're a parent, you don't necessarily get that choice, and you shouldn't necessarily have that choice all the time. So it was an intensely complicated moment in my own personal life and also the life of the character.
She says, of all the places in the world, she belongs in Florida. How dispiriting to learn this of herself.
Right. I mean, there are days when I think, you know, I could wake up in Paris. I could wake up in Tuscany or in Japan and have a different life, but I would carry myself there. And I am this almost 40-year-old person who has so much baggage. You can't get away from your own baggage. And Florida is everywhere now. Wherever I go, I am in Florida.
You're reminding me of this kind of multiple perspectives, the voice of a character, right? In Fates and Furies, this was a he said, she said, opposite sides of the same story, telling their story of their time together, not necessarily the same at all. So that's not something that, you know, you're going to be able to do in another novel. you've kind of done that one, right? And the surprise is there. But most of the stories in Florida do have one voice, but it allows you to tell stories from countless perspectives. So how do you get inside the heads of so many different characters?
So in a novel, it's just something that you apply yourself to very calmly on a daily basis. And eventually there's accumulation of pages and attrition of fear, and you have a thing. But with short stories for me, they're closer to poetry for me. So they come out in this ecstatic burst, and usually they come out multiple times. One time in an ecstatic burst, and I look at it and I think, this is terrible, I throw it out. And then I put it back into the subconscious to be embroidered upon for years, and then take it back out again when it feels necessary or urgent. So it's really just the process of writing a short story. They come out over the course of years in which, you know, I've thought through these characters really deeply. But that's the beautiful thing about representing a state like Florida that actually cannot be pinned down because there's no single reality. You can do it in short stories because you can do it in a multiplicity of voices and a multiplicity of characters and still feel like you're saying something about a state, that geographical state, but also a psychological state.
You said something about putting it back in the unconscious. Is there a process for that, or you just sort of, you know, put it down there while you're doing the dishes or making dinner or something like that?
Yeah, no, the process
I'm sorry,
is really...
those were totally gendered examples, by the way.
Yeah, no, my husband does the dishes, by the way. So, you know, it's not conscious, right? And I think that when we are receptive to our subconscious, ness. As artists, that's when the really good work happens. So I think that a lot of times I really do just throw out all my drafts. So if I were to do a story, throw it out, throw it back into the subconscious, and let it sit there, if it ever comes out again, it needs to be told. If it doesn't come out again, that's fine. It didn't need to be told, right? Mm-hmm. Or I haven't yet found the way to tell the story that I wanted to tell. So it's more about keeping things mysterious and opaque rather than forcing them into the light prematurely.
You really have to trust that process then, don't you?
Oh, you do. Oh, yes, you do. And there are years when I don't write anything good, and that's okay, too. You have to trust that if you sit down and do the work daily, faithfully, someday something good will happen.
One of the other things that strikes me about these stories is there's a lot that is unspoken. You know, the hurt that a woman never shares with her husband, or the boy that hides his genius from numbers from his teachers and his classmates. Is that a Southern thing? Is that a human thing, that hiding?
Yeah, I think it's a human thing. I do. And I think that we all have these internal lives that nobody else gets a glimpse of. And I think that's what makes us beautiful, strange humans. I mean, if you sit down and you actually talk to another person for a long time, a stranger, they will show their weirdness to you so quickly. And the weirdness comes out of this internal life that they have that is not glimpsable unless they allow you to share it. And I think that that's a true, true generosity and beauty of humanity.
Lauren Groff, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you, Virginia.
That is author Lauren Groff. Her latest book of short stories, Florida, is out now. She'll be in Atlanta tomorrow evening for a reading at SCAD Show in Midtown. And you can find details on the event at our website, gpbnews.org.